everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Good Anime Palette Podcast. This is episode number 83. I am your co-host Jason, and joining me in my home is none other than my co-host, my confidant, the person that I identify with the podcast, Will. What's up?
Very, very thankful you welcomed me into your home for however many episodes we've been doing this. I've also welcomed you into my home for however many episodes we've been doing this. So, let's talk about home.
Mikasa is su casa, right?
Yes. So, as you can tell from the title, or at least, you know, what title we come up with for this episode.
The preamble, right?
We are going to be going into a slurry of different, like, themes, vibes, feelings, not necessarily genres, but just like general observations of what it means to have a home, to belong, and to have a sense of identity within anime and manga. Not just the genre itself, but maybe even like beyond it as well, as like the whole sort of subculture and where it belongs within this whole gamut of entertainment. So we don't necessarily have like a straight direction in terms of how we're going to be talking about this topic, but you know how it goes, right? Like we tend to go over certain tropes, we go over certain themes, maybe even characters or even anime series, and we kind of just build, you know, a discussion based on that particular talking point, because I feel like whenever we have a discussion, and even if we have a docket full of like things we want to talk about, there's always that one or two things that we just kind of like revolve a little longer than usual. And that's where like I feel like we build the most sort of like enjoyable and good discussions, because it's things that we either vibe with or things that we disagree, but we want to have that sort of, you know, discourse with. So let's see where this conversation goes.
Yeah, the thing that I want to say is there are dockets that, or like, you know, episodes where it's very content heavy in terms of research. I mean, things like how anime is made, or we have to recall events or spoiler series review, so where there needs to be a lot of like background knowledge, and it's like flooded in terms of how our docket or script is structured.
Yeah, this one, there's no explanations, there's no preamble, there's nothing like in terms of like needing to ease you in onto the discussion topic. I think this one is probably the one that you can either relate to or like get the gist of fairly quickly. So just to start things off, you know, usually whenever we write our ideas and start putting together a sort of timeline, a schedule of what episodes to do, what topics we're focusing on, and when to release them, this one actually came up in comparison to the others more recently than, you know, our set in stone like GWEA, ASAPs, Gaza cleanups, and all that. So this is actually something that you kind of brought up. You at least you brought up like the draft idea in the beginning of talking about home and belonging or identity, right? Mm-hmm. So what brought up that thought in the first place? Like, what was it that you wanted to sort of explore within this feel, this vibe?
So normally when we do thematic, you know, analysis in anime and manga, so not a genre, but it revolves around like a trope or a certain thing, right? We usually have the structure down pretty solid. But with this one, it was a last minute change, but it also was one where I had struggled with, because I kind of went too broad in terms of, rather than focusing on the theme of home, belonging, and identity in anime and manga, I kind of took it a step too large and said, oh, identity as like weebs and like a community within the large spectrum.
Like a family of sorts, like a community.
Yeah, and there is a lot of like the culture of anime and manga there, but I think Will was very appropriate in reining me in, be like, let's kind of dial it back and focus and kind of hone in on a bunch of talking points and see where we go.
Like, what is like the sort of like core component that mm-hmm. exists within like a family, a community, a group, and whatnot? And I think that like being able to have a sense of belonging and identity in a comfort zone is probably like the most appropriate way to go about this topic, because let's be real, if you wanted to talk about like the whole anime community, like there's this massive diaspora of shit that's like you can never cover everything,
and it's only going to get bigger by the day. Well,
also, there's also like too many conflicting thoughts and processes in terms of how people watch anime, how people consume, or even like what do people think about anime.
And to be honest, I think looking back, there isn't a lot of good discussions that can be had, and it'll be long and drawn out, right? So I went down to the thinking mind palace that it is my stupid brain, and I kind of dug out two kind of very popular sayings that I think will carry most of this episode in terms of the vibe, if you will, which is the typical saying of there's no place like home, and friends are the family that we choose for ourselves. I don't know who originated that those quotes, but I'm sure those are quotes that you have heard probably throughout your life, all you listeners. And if you haven't, now you have. And I think in anime and manga, there is a lot of that. Again, it might not be that strong of a theme that you can really carve out, be like, oh yeah, that anime is about home. I mean, not many animes are like RPG real estate isekai or whatever it's called. So there's not a lot of like, oh, let's have a slice of life home renovation anime and manga. Wait, what's that live action like reality TV's like House Flippers or?
There's that one, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not like
there's also the Marie Kondo series of like, you know, organizing your life so you're happy at home, right?
Yeah, and minimalist and stuff like that, right? But there is definitely a lot of like semi like tangents that are related to, again, home, belonging, and identity in anime and manga. So that is kind of how I would like to set the stage, right? And I think like there is so many things that stem from home because it's like your comfort zone, as you said. Well, it's the place that you identify with or don't want to identify with, but either way, it's stuck, right? It's kind of like you're born into a family. You have no choice in that matter. You can do something about it later on when you have that freedom, but until then, there's nothing you can really do because it's in your DNA or it's in the geographical location that you're in.
Yeah, I mean, it's also like in the same way of reflecting it into like anime and manga or any medium. Like, you're not born into liking something, right? You're not born into anime, and just because like you have like parents that are weebs doesn't necessarily mean that like you're going to grow up the same way. You know, it's always like when it comes to talking about mediums of entertainment, mediums of like these different genres, whether it be comic books, graphic novels, video games, light novels, manga, anime, or like sports, right? Any sort of entertainment, right? It's never a guarantee that the environment you're in predicates like the environment that you will forever grow up in.
It can be, but it doesn't dictate it, right?
There's always like a lot of like factors that you can or cannot control.
But believe me when I say there, you have no choice in where you start. I mean, unless if you're an isekai protagonist, sure, I guess then you got that one get out of jail free card, and that's why it's in our among many discussions within this episode, right? Will, what kind of thing that you want to start us off with?
So, I think in terms of like, I know we don't really want to like sort of like do explanations and disclaimers and whatnot, but the idea of home,
yeah,
first of all, right? So how do we want to go about that in terms of like are we going into like the more like metaphysical, are we going into the more literal, are we going into the more sort of like it's just a vibe, it's just a feeling, is it really like your physical surroundings and the people that are in it? And I think like you want to, because I mean, like it sounds convoluted and like unnecessary, right? Like it sounds like I'm talking a lot of flaff here, but that's also something that a lot of series in general, whether it be anime, manga, or any form of entertainment, really dials into.
Yeah,
especially like if we talk like anime and manga specifically, especially shonen action. The first character who often is like the protagonist and like the poster child of the series you're watching, the discussion of home and family and belonging is always going to revolve around that particular character, right? Because there really is no point in watching shonen action without conflict. And the conflict, more often than not, is not what happens when it comes to fighting an enemy or an adversary. It's more understanding of one's place in the universe.
Right.
What they do to be able to move from one place to another. Whether they can find a continuum of belonging wherever they are, or whether they can find a sense of acceptance from the get-go.
Yeah, and look no further than probably one of the best shonen series of all time, Naruto, right? I think we both grew up with Naruto, and there is plenty of friendship, power, conquers all. Obviously, One Piece is obviously in that discussion. I'm just using Naruto in this particular case. But there's also a very good identity of being shunned, being exiled, or I don't want to stay in the Leaf Village anymore. I want to carve out my own path, or
I don't want to be ridiculed by all my classmates anymore. I want to be the very best. So I'm just going to do everything on my own. But as you grow, you find out that, you know what? Actually, you do need a good environment. You do need to surround yourself around positive energy to be able to actually find that you are accepted, to find that you belong somewhere.
Oh, I'm a heartless guy that carries around a large container full of sand. Well, I don't belong anywhere. I'm just a monster. But it turns out, no, over time, actually, I'm one of the pillars of my community. In fact, I am the leader. I really underestimated even the adversary that I almost killed.
It actually is, like, I mean, kind of crazy that when you talk about Naruto, the first thing you think is, of course, ninjas, right? Mm-hmm. Ninjutsu, taijutsu, genjutsu. You think
shinobis
about,
and
you think
all
about
that.
Like, the battles of, like, the different Hokages and all the different enemies, Orochimaru,
all the tales,
and all that. But, like, when you actually, like, boil it down, it sounds fickle as fuck, but, like, every character is broken as fuck, and it's because of the fact that they themselves don't have a sense of belonging or a sense of home, mm-hmm. right? Like, Naruto is born into the world having almost no connection to his parents, only learning about it as he learns more about himself.
He's a literal orphan when the manga starts.
Sasuke's family is fucked up.
Yep.
Insanely fucked up. Gaara's family is fucked up,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you look at, like, more wholesome characters like Rock Lee, right? Like, were his parents. But it's more like you know, the whole, like, thing about, like, you know, blood and family and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the more famous quotes as well is, I don't know who quoted it, but I'm going to say it anyway, where, like,
blood is thicker.
No, it's more like blood makes you related, but love, loyalty, and trust makes you family.
Right.
So that's where it's like, Guy is not Rock Lee's father,
mm-hmm.
but he doesn't need to be related to him to be his, like, father figure or, like, family for him. And, like, down to the fact that they wear the same clothes and have the same fighting styles, well, literally the same bowl cut. Like, it doesn't matter whether or not you're born into this family or not. You can end up choosing your family in this sense. Because we've heard many times. I mean, you can see as well, right? Like, with Sasuke's family, bro, is that a family you want to have? No, but it's the family you have because you have no choice in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, therefore, they act out. They find ways to break the cycle and find ways to really get that sense of belonging rather than just being a lonely nomad throughout the whole series.
But on the flip side of that, right, going off of home is, sometimes you could be a degenerate, you could be an outcast, you could be like a neat, but because you're family, because you are related to one another, you have a bond that can never be obtained through other means.
Yeah, but I also, like, on the more darker side of things too, you have a responsibility
yeah.
at the end, right? And yeah. whether or not you choose to honor that responsibility, I guess it determines how you view family.
Yeah.
Right? Because let's be real. If you ever had family, and I'm talking about anime and manga, right?
Yeah.
I'm not talking about
yeah.
IRL because that's yeah. way too deep.
That's way too right? deep. That's
but, like, when you have,
way too real.
When you reach that kind of predicament where you have a family member that is acting out or is so different from everybody else that they kind of just socially ostracize themselves from the family, the definition of family changes at that point. Where there are many times where we talk about anime and manga series where there are blood-related brothers and sisters, family members, but they choose to fight against them. They choose to not be on their side because of how differently they feel towards one another or how differently they are in terms of what their motivations are in life. Like their general motive within an anime or a manga like vastly like deviates from each other to the point where the word family and home, the words family and home don't end up meaning the same thing from point A to point B.
So going off of that, would it be safe to say for us, right, going off of disclaimers and definitions that for argument's sake, just for this episode, home is more of like a physical space, like whether it is a hometown, your actual house, a tangible, physical, dimensional space, whereas belonging and identity obviously strays more towards the
it's hard
metaphorical.
Because, I mean, one of the other quotes when it comes to home is where the heart is.
Yeah.
And the heart doesn't necessarily need to be in a physical place, like stuck in a specific location, mm-hmm. to identify a place as home. In the end, it's... It's a vibe.
I know, for this episode though. Like just I mean we
But
we,
the,
we,
but then again it's like I don't think we need to really differentiate it because it's so interwoven in terms of what belonging somewhere means. It's like just because you belong somewhere doesn't mean you call it home.
And to go off of that, right? The fact that it's also interwoven, it's one of those things, and I think it's also kind of apt why we're very free flow is because home identity is one of those things that is not necessarily always smack in your face, right? Of course, you would get instances like, oh, you're part of, the Leaf Village. You're part of the Windbreakers. You're part of this fold.
Well, I mean, when you talk about Windbreaker, right? Like, I am a delinquent. I've been brought up in a delinquent environment. This is how I've acted. And that's how I'm going to stay. I don't care if your delinquent ways are different from mine. I'm going to stick by my mantra. I'm going to stick by my oath. And that's how it's going to be. This is my sense of belonging. And I don't belong with you. But over time, like you realize that these things are not predetermined. That you can always change your perspective and your perception of what the meaning of home is. What the meaning of life and identity is. And so it's like... I understand in terms of like discussion purposes, maybe mm-hmm. we want to sort of segment it, but in the end, like there's really no like set in stone way of defining what a home is or what identity is. Because
absolutely,
also, those things are very fluid.
Yeah, and very philosophical and existential, right? And the other thing also is
like for example, like, mm-hmm. when we talk about home and like a place of belonging, right? If we talk about a physical home, that never exists in Vinland Saga, right?
Yeah.
So it's like you literally...
Well, it exists in the very, 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 very
but
beginning.
But it's destroyed.
Yeah.
And taken away from him. So it mm-hmm. no longer exists anymore.
Yeah.
So then what happens next? Oh, we move on to the next place and seek home. But like, this is not home. This is not what it used to be. But that's the point. In the end, like, it doesn't necessarily matter where you go. It's how you get there and what feelings and emotions you carry along with you. Like, Thorfinn, Jesus Christ, like... If you ask him what it means to have an identity and what it means to belong somewhere, he would just look at you and then walk away.
And then maybe slit your throat.
I don't think you... Well, I mean, you watched season two?
Not yet.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched like first episode.
Okay. I won't say anything.
Okay, fine. Fair enough. But what I will say is, in terms of like, home is where the heart is, right? There is a lot of shows that are wanderers, right? Let's talk about the one that we haven't brought up in a long time, but we can't stop talking about it in our minds as Mushishi.
I knew you were going to say that one because that one is actually like perfect.
It's an anthology series of a dude literally wandering, helping out spiritual ailments and bridging the gap between the physical and the spiritual, right? To Your Eternity is also very much like that. There's no through line in terms of, oh, it starts and stops at this one location. It moves not only between characters, but through the times, literally. And what would you say is even the main character? There is none, I would argue.
It's the idea of home.
Yeah.
It's the idea of finding a place where you belong. But the importance of this particular thought process is not the destination, right? It's how you got there in the first place, or yeah. how you want to move from one place to another.
And going off of that, I remember you loving Space Dandy. And
And
to my knowledge, all they do is go to different planets and have wacky adventures, right? You can say, like, for example, same thing with Cowboy Bebop. It's like the crew is the same, but the circumstances, the things that they do along the way are all different. One Piece, again, I'm going off of at least what I've read, which is really very little in the grand scheme of things, is but, like, island to island.
The same vibe goes all the way through, in that this is a band of misfits that come together from broken families and homes, or just, you know, terrible familial circumstances. But through the bonds that they develop over the course of their journey, they become more than family. They are one. One Piece. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but that's essentially it. And I think, like, a lot of times whenever you watch anime, regardless of it being a shonen, an adventure, a suspense or whatnot, like, of course, like, there are going to be series that don't really give a shit about that because that's not, like, the point of interest. But, like, mm-hmm. a lot of shonen series for sure focus on the idea of family, the idea of home. I mean, fuck, dude, you can do that with Demon Slayer. Mm-hmm. You can do that with Chainsaw Man, mm-hmm. right? You can do that with Hell's Paradise.
As in, it's more of the journey rather than being...
Or just the fact that, like, their sense of home has been destroyed from the first episode.
Mm-hmm. Would you
their
say...
sense of, or their sense and literal family have been destroyed from the first episode.
And going off of that, you can interpret a bunch of different ways in terms of a destruction of certain of your home, right? Let's take in the most overused typical genre of probably the decade, isekais. It is a non-stop, in-your-face trope of, yo, your life or your home or your current identity currently sucks, and you got truck, you met, you had a date with Truck-kun on the street.
It's not always just, you know, it sucks, but it's also more just like, everyone you knew and loved is dead.
No, you're dead, and that reality is gone.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
Welcome to your new life.
Yeah, exactly. Right, and then a lot of it is like, oh, in this new life, the second chance, I regret it because I was so sickly. I mean, Farming Life in Another World is an anime that I quite enjoyed, and instead, I was just like, oh, you know what? I'm just gonna fucking farm, because that's what I want to do. I want a second chance out, or oh, I retained all of my knowledge so I can really hack my way through this new life that I carve out and be the person, or I think will be the person that I wanted to be, that I had the potential to be. And it's one of those things that everyone, power fantasy, wish fulfillment, is why isekai is so famous of a genre nowadays.
Yeah, but it's also like that power fantasy, it's also because of the supernatural shit that happens that we actually don't focus on, like the idea of home. Like you said, you are no longer in your original world. You are now thrown into a completely foreign and completely new location. You don't know anybody here. Everyone you knew before, they're gone. They could still be alive, but you're never going to see them again. So what the fuck do they do? Oh, let me just pull up my menu and see what skills I got. Oh, okay. I know black magic, but I'm only level 1, but I already know, like, the top black magic level spell. How am I going to make that work for me? Oh, okay, cool. I'm going to be super overpowered. And then, like, that's, like, why a lot of people end up liking this over, like, superpower fantasy kind of shit.
Yeah, I think one of the easiest and, at the same time, ironically, the most difficult things about talking about home and identity is, A, as you said, there it's on a spectrum of how you integrate it into your anime and manga. But the other thing is, most of the time, again, barring exceptions, which there is a lot of, you won't really think about it as a central theme. You won't notice it per se. Of course, plenty of ones, it's like the lack of home, or because, I don't know, I'm guessing in Iron Blood Orphans, shit happens, you get fucking angry.
I mean, even in Naruto, it's like, you have to be reminded that Naruto is an orphan. You have to be reminded. They literally show his parents dying.
Yeah.
Right? And that's where it's like, you are forced to recognize that the sense of home and belonging has forever changed for Naruto. But if you never saw any of that shit, it's just a ninja fighting his way to the top and becoming the head of the Hidden Leaf Village.
But at the same time, I don't think people really put a lot of thought in terms of, like, in terms of noticing it.
Because it's...
Because
like you said, it may or may not be important.
Yeah. I think it's you can throw 1,000 examples, but I always think of it like music and orchestral soundtracks for anime. It's when it is there, most of the time you won't really notice it. You'll notice some that are exceptional. You notice some that are really inappropriate. I think of The Fable, for example, or like, you know, or Violet Evergarden, for example, in terms of really swelling music or anything that Sawano or Kevin Penkin does, right? It's like very memorable and really well integrated. But most of the time, like 80% of the time, if I ask you, yo, what do you think of the orchestral? You'd be like, I mean, it's orchestral music. It's fine. Like it was just there. But it's an important part of any anime, yeah. Right?
I mean, like, when we were talking about how, like, home and belonging, it really does depend on how much the producers or, like, even the creators sprinkle into it. But it's also, like, something that it's just right there in your face.
Yeah.
Like, for example, like, the most famous example, mm-hmm. in my opinion,
mm-hmm.
that would fully encapsulate what it means to belong, the sense of identity and home, is Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood. In mm-hmm. this, for this discussion, because what are Alphonse and Elric doing? They're trying to resurrect their mother. Or they're trying to solve something so that they can fix one another, their siblings, right? Mm-hmm. What is Scar doing? Scar is fighting against the enemy as retribution for the death of his family.
And, like, the butchering of his homeland.
And then, of course, on the opposite side of the spectrum of the family...
You have the Sins.
Well, no. I think the worst of the Sins, which is Girl Dog. Because that's also family, right? So then now your idea of family is so fucking warped. How could someone that is fully blood-related birth you as well could do the same fucking thing that a war criminal would do to someone that they don't even know?
Yeah.
It's like, that's why it's like, when you watch it, it's like, that's why it was so impactful. Mm-hmm. That's why it was so fucked up, because this is no longer just about a war. This is no longer just about alchemy and trying to be overpowered. This is also
or a simple home visit that turns out way more intense and fucked up than it should be.
This is legitimately telling you your idea of home and family, forget about it.
Yeah.
This is it. You might think that they legitimately have a home. They have a family. But fucked up shit happens in this home, in this place where you're supposed to belong and feel safe. Whereas you have Alphonse and Elric literally running around across all over the world trying to figure out how to do this spell, to be able to, this alchemy, to be able to not only fix themselves, but also potentially bring back their dead mother.
I mean, when we talk about lineage and family that fucks you up and binds you, and there's nothing you can do, or the whole point of 3 seasons is to learn how to break out of that mold. Fruits Basket, the remake, is extremely like relevant in this scenario, right? The Zodiacs literally have a problem that they cannot overcome initially. They're literally stuck in an estate. They can't leave. Everything is bound by the Zodiacs.
It's fate. It's predetermination.
And there's nothing...
And predestination as well.
And in terms of the beginning... A lot of those characters are really likable, really good people at their core, maybe barring one particular person or a couple, depending on how you see it. But they can't do anything about their present circumstances. So therefore, they need intervention, in this case, Toru Honda, right? But that...
You need an outsider.
Yeah. Oh my God, a foreigner. Ooh. What are
not
they?
Part of the Zodiac. What the fuck are you doing here? But this person who has no connection to the Zodiac family at all is also the one that bridges and mends all the wounds and the misunderstandings and misconceptions that every person believed they were always going to be fated to.
And to go off of our circumstances as two Asian dudes that are quite westernized, we live in Asia where the concept, and especially that is extremely prevalent in places like South Korea and Japan, but obviously in Hong Kong and China and other places in Asia as well, the identity of carrying on the family lineage, especially in Japan. Maybe because we see anime and manga all the time.
Dude, you know, like when I got married like a couple of months ago, like, and I was doing like the whole family dinners and all that, you know, doing the whole like tea ceremonies and shit. After every single one of them, it's like, congratulations.
Now give me a dude.
Bring a grandson. No, not a dude. No, I think like generally people have moved past the whole he have to bear a son kind of thing. But it's more like, time to bring in a grandson.
Right.
Yeah, that kind
or
of thing.
Or granddaughter, yeah, right? Granddaughter. Yeah, exactly.
It's like carrying on the family line, which is a very traditional, very outdated way of thinking about what a family duty is supposed to be, right?
And also, like, typical gender roles, caretaker, breadwinner stuff is very fluid nowadays, and I'm all for it. But in Japan,
it's fluid, but it's still, like, you still have a large amount of people that still feel like the traditional household is one person makes the money, one person cares for the home. And you bear children to carry on that cycle.
Right.
But again, it's like these things constantly change. We've seen like very, very recently the idea of what a family is no longer what it is like 100 years ago, even 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like let's not even talk about the declining birth rates around the world. Right.
Right. But in Japan, at least within popular conception or misconception or in anime and manga, there is, in my opinion, a super heavy focus, an extremely heavy focus on carrying on the tradition in terms of, oh, I worked as a chef, so you, son, daughter, are going to be a chef. Tough shit. Or at least I'm going to do whatever I can to have you be my heir, my successor, whether you like it or not. That is present in so many anime and manga, like
let's not even just talk about entertainment. Let's talk IRL for that sense.
Yo, okay. Yeah.
Japanese royal family.
Yeah. There's always been an emperor. When the princess had to give up her birthright, so to speak, right?
Only because, and not because she chose to leave, it's because the fact that she wanted to marry a commoner.
Yeah.
And therefore, Princess Mako
had
to essentially leave the family to live the commoner life. And that's where
we're not being degrading when we say that. It is literally the royal family commoner dynamic is a big issue at that time.
Look at fucking, like, you know, England. Look at Britain.
Yeah.
Right? With Prince Harry and Meghan. Mm-hmm. Like, that shit had to happen too because of the fact that they're breaking down the foundations of what a traditional royal family is supposed to be, where you just carry on that lineage of royalty. But when you then move on to wanting to marry or, you know, bring in somebody that is a commoner, that breaks tradition, you have to leave. That's, again, like you and I have already said, we're not critiquing it. It's not our place to say whether it's right or wrong because we have no experience whatsoever. Neither of us are royalty. Neither of us have experience in it. We cannot really offer two cents in terms of whether it's right or wrong.
But what we can do to go along the same lines, but shifting it back to anime and manga, what if you are a JoJo? Your lineage...
Well, that's just a curse.
The Joestar with the Dio, right? That is a lineage that is cemented in the lore, at least up to where I'm at. And I'm guessing it's going to be a mainstay. Who knows? But at least for like more than several seasons, it's always a Joestar. And then maybe there's like Golden Wind where it's kind of not.
It is, but I mean...
You know what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or what was the other one that is... I don't really want to say...
They're all connected through the Joestar lineage in some form or another.
Right.
Giorno's one's a bit weird.
Yes.
Because he's a bit of a mutt, but... he's a JoJo.
I mean, if we go back to Game of Thrones, I know we're jumping back and forth with IRL stuff. It's like Jon Snow, right?
But I feel like this is a conversation that isn't always just going to revolve specifically around the genre of anime and manga, because when we're talking...
It's so universal.
Exactly, right? I mean, we've talked about the royal family here in Japan and England. We talked about Game of Thrones. We're talking about the traditional familial like traditions in Asia. And now we're talking about fucking JoJo and Fruits Basket. There's really nothing that connects everything together outside of the fact that everybody is trying to understand what home is, what belonging is, what identity is.
And I think that is actually the commonality and through line. It's relatability.
Yeah.
Whether or not that relatability is with a feeling, a desire, because I want a second chance at reincarnation and I want to have a power fantasy, or I am stuck with this family tradition that I want no part of, or I literally don't have a home or family to go back to anymore because I want to make it out in the cosmopolitan Tokyo, or they all died tragically and I'm out for blood. Because it's so universal, it's relatable, or at least you can see it through line, at least in terms of the pantheon of entertainment, right? Things like what happened to Tanjiro in the very, very beginning of Demon Slayer. I think a lot of people, including myself, sometimes when you're into like season 2, 3, 4, or all the way to the end, you're like...
You kind of forget. You forget what he's doing in the first place.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, he's carrying his sister the whole time, and you wonder, okay, it's because she's super... You forget that she's his sister, and he's trying to lift the curse of her being a vampire.
Well, a demon vampire kind of thing. And also, don't forget, he wants revenge because they family dead, bro.
Yeah.
The one big bad, right?
They dead as fuck. They're super dead.
And the other thing is also, when things are lighthearted and fluffy, like Spy X Family, the Forgers, where three people /4 are...
There's no relation to them whatsoever.
Right? Other than them...
One's a spy, one's an assassin, one is a psychic, and one's a dog that happens to also have psychic abilities. But they're all like adopted into this family.
With circumstances led them together. But
they grow together as a family.
Yeah. And obviously, I'm very sure that the author called them the Forgers because of forging and faking. But it turns out in the end, over time, you become the genuine real deal of a family. Right? So... it's always at the very core of it, in my opinion, some sort of rational relatability or actually related to some experience that you personally have. So using always this ingredients is always understandable, but how you use it, how much, is always debatable.
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, that actually is like a very good example of the fact that you're putting together a whacktastic group of misfits together and putting them under one household and calling them a family. Because when you think about a lot of anime series, whether they be shonens, whether they be seinens, whether they be fantasies, adventures, comedies, and whatnot, a lot of times you don't actually see family. You don't actually, like, more often than not, it's just the like high school kids, or it's just, you know, young adults, you know, wandering around. You don't actually see a whole lot of like interaction between mother and child, father and child, siblings.
I would even go one step further and say, in general, family is actually used as a negative rather than a positive.
A lot, yes.
I'm not saying that actually having a family or, you know, is actually bad.
But it's also what sets them off on being like being shunned, being exiled, just being ostracized, or why they went on this adventure in the first place.
Because, look, slice of life, probably in general, or shoujo series, have very well-to-do integrated themes of family and home in general, because there's no crazy stakes.
They try and make you feel comfortable. And to have, like, a very close-knit nuclear family is pretty much, like, a good core to have when you want to have that sense of stability.
In general, shoujo and slice of life, in general... broad speaking, family is like a super awesome, happy, supportive thing. in general, right? You can look at, for example, Kaguya-sama, though, and be like, I don't know, Shinomiya and the family, I don't know, you know? But look, the majority of it is like, the family's a crutch. The family, wait, did I use it right? Is a pillar that you lean on, and they lean on you, and everyone grows together, right? And in shonen action, or seinen actually even as well, it's always a problem that spurs the hero's journey or is fucked up.
Or just never mentioned. Okay. Tokyo Ghoul. Kaneki, there's no mention of his family at all. Bleach, barely any mention of their families. Right? One Piece. Some characters have some really fucked up families. Some characters don't even have families. Some characters don't even mention a family, right? Chainsaw Man, no sense of family there. Demon yeah. Slayer, family been destroyed, so there's no reference point in terms of like what family is. But instead, you see this particular individual that either started with nothing or lost everything, meeting up with other people who are either of similar circumstance or of similar misfortune, and they band together, and that is where then you see, maybe not family, because family is kind of a weird word to use, especially when they're not blood related, but rather a sense of community, a sense of belonging. Right. And that's why, like, I think the word belonging itself is the cross between of home, family, and identity. Because without belonging somewhere, how do you identify oneself? What would you recognize as home? Who do you call family without that sense of belonging?
Like, if there was ever a spectrum in my mind, belonging is the glue that ties identity and home and all of this stuff together. Because whether you like it or not, you belong to this family. Whether you like it or not, you're at least you voluntarily belong to the Kurosano volleyball team. For example, I almost said basketball, my bad.
Kuroko.
Kuroko no basket, Kurasano volleyball.
Easy
which
to
is
mix up.
Still the same in terms of the concept of sports team.
They both have balls.
I have two of them. going off of that, sports team is an extremely prevalent and effective way of conveying identification and belonging to some kind of community.
Aishel 21. That one is like straight up like, yo, we all have nothing in common. We all don't even like each other, but we have each other.
I mean, all sports animes gravitate around, I don't like you, our personalities clash, Tsuki doesn't like Kageyama, which also doesn't like Hinata,
But we share the same motivations. We also have the same struggles. And it's through like breaking down that adversity and bonding with each other that eventually the team becomes a family. That you become one with each other. You have that sense of belonging. And now you can find your identity, not like within a group of people, but identifying yourself. Who you are, what you mean to yourself and the people around you, and what you can do for yourself and the people around you.
I think one of the best directors of all time for conveying family is Hosoda, with Summer Wars and Wolf Children specifically.
Jesus Christ. Like, you just say Wolf Children, and that's already like...
I mean, that is the whole... Wolf Children, that's the whole point of the movie. In fact, if anything, actually, now that I think about it, when I said that there isn't necessarily some anime or manga that talks about home or family as like a huge core of it, Wolf Children is almost like the perfect example of it. Along the same lines, I would argue a certain other show about Violet Evergarden is the polar opposite of that. And you make your home, or you make the glue of letters, telegraphing, transcripting all of these messages to bond people together, right? And it's one of those things that it's such a good device when utilized well to invoke emotional, like, swelling of the heart, you know, things that will make you tear up.
Yeah, especially when you're talking about Violet Evergarden, someone who is legitimately just a like laser-focused war machine, but gets everything taken away from her, and all she
even gets the
left,
limbs.
All she gets left is just her duty of mailing letters, getting letters written, sending them out to people, and seeing what her letters can bring to the families, to the individuals that received those letters. It's those stories, even though she herself does not belong in any community. She is legitimately a nomad, a lone wolf. She got nothing going for her outside of her duty. But the effect that she has on people when it comes to handing over that envelope, letting them open it up and read it.
All I have to say, episode 10.
All the tears, man.
All the tears in the world is not enough.
I'll never see umbrellas the same way ever again.
Yeah, my God. But the other thing that I think is, like, we are talking a lot of things that are either very, either hypothetical, philosophical, existential, or very heavy in scope, in terms of, like, burden and
drama. But this
is
also why, like, in the beginning, like, the idea of even talking about this topic was just so big.
Right.
Right?
But let us go on the opposite direction and of the lighthearted, funny, and wacky, and I'm just going to say, Way of the House Husband is an extremely funny, awesome, crazy take on subverting family values, gender typical roles, and your identity as if you were a fucking Yakuza, the baddest of the bunch. What was his nickname? Like the Dragon?
Yeah.
That
of his tattoo on his back.
That literally fucks shit up. But then all of a sudden, you're relegated willingly and happily into being a house husband, where now the battles being fought is discounts in the grocery store or
finding parking.
Yeah. Or listen, my wife really wants that action figure because she's an otaku. I need to fucking get it. There's only one left and there's a kid grabbing onto it. Not this day, boy. And I love Way of the House Husband. I haven't read up on the manga since last we talked about it, and I haven't really watched that much more. Actually, I don't think there is any more than like 2 seasons.
They also did a live action, but I think it was like a live action with Ken Suda as well,
which is like hilariously meta, right?
Yeah.
But also like the most appropriate kind of casting, because Way of the House Husband is actually all about home. Because he's literally physically stuck there most of the time. Not always.
It's in the name as well, right?
Exactly. The other thing is, it subverts kind of your typical expectations. And the best part is, after all of that, it's hilarious. And that's like the flip side, because you can literally use house husband however you please. But then also, going back again in an apartment complex, but like the most heartbreaking, gut-wrenching samurai kid I've ever seen.
Katara lives alone.
Like, what? Like, Yomu. Yomu. Like, getting a green, ice cold green tea and then coming back is like the shortest, like, trope all of a sudden that has the most amount of impact that I still remember to this day. Look, Katara Lives Alone, there's plenty of awesome parts in it, and it's a great series.
But it's also Life Lessons the Anime, in which the things you thought that you experienced in life, yeah, nah, that ain't nothing compared to what Katara's gone through, and he's only 4 years old.
But on top of all that, right, that green tea thing was literally maybe like 8 seconds, but for me at least, it was so, it says so much when there was actually so little to really narrate, talk about, or on screen. Because it was so effective in conveying a certain message, right? And it is so crazily good. The fable, You Love It to Death, is literally about people having to adjust to another way of lifestyle due to a relocation. But at the same time, you can't detach yourself from your identity of being one of the most badass assassins ever. Oh, also, you kind of have a hot sister that you kind of don't give a fuck about.
You can take the dude out of the underworld, but you can't take the underworld out of the dude.
But at the same time, what if you had to learn home? Like alicization, going off of what you just said. It is like, how would you even categorize that in terms of, like, the game is how you identify as a community? But what if, like, you are birthed from that kind of, you know what I mean?
It's less about that and more about identity in the end, right?
Right. Because what am I? Who am I?
Exactly. Because when the characters, I'm going to spoil a little bit here. So 5 seconds. 5 seconds over. When they become self-aware and they know that this is not like just a regular world, that they're actually a simulation, that's when they start like freaking out. And that's why like they had those error messages and they had those barriers set up within the game, right? Using test cases to make sure that if a character ever gets to the point where they start becoming self-aware, that they start locking them down because, hey, no, you're not supposed to realize that you are not just a human being. You are
QA isekai is like, it's basically that. If you go outside of the confines of the rules, you're not supposed to, but we are the sleuths that need to find that shit out.
Yeah. But then, of course, you know, analysisation. Hey, these guys are very, very self-aware. They're very smart. They know what's up. And so then it's like basically then figuring out, well, if I'm just AI, then why do I feel all these things? Why can I do all these things? And then they realize there's a bigger picture to what identity and belonging is.
Let's talk.
We're actually reaching now like past the halfway point. So rather than going on a break, because I think we're on a good stream.
I'm all for it.
We'll still credit the mid-credit song as well, so don't worry about that. But I wanted to sort of pivot the conversation a little bit.
Sure.
Because and you can still, like, you know, relate it back to, you know, like, specific series or tropes and whatnot, but, and I know I mentioned the
this
other day.
This is our journey, man.
I know I mentioned the other day that maybe we don't want to branch out too far, but I think we've gotten to a point now where, like, we talked about what it means to have a sense of belonging, what home means across, you know, different characters and how other characters have different senses of identity based on those experiences. If we were to then take that out of anime and manga, out of the genre, out of the medium, and talk about us looking into anime in general, there has to be reasons, there has to be ways for one to have such a deep-rooted connection and affiliation with the genre in the first place. And it can't just simply be down to, I want to see awesome shonen fights. I want to see the most tense, suspense, mysterious, supernatural shit ever, right? Summertime Render. I'm here to see, you know, crazy romances. I want to ship people here and there. But again, when it comes to shipping, when it comes to looking at character relationships, that in itself is kind of identifying belonging of characters. When two come together, they should be like this. When three come together, they should be like this. And so I wanted to sort of pivot this into like the grander scheme of things as viewers of anime and manga.
Like the weebdom? Yes. The weeb community?
Because if you really want to talk about it, the weebdom, mm-hmm. the whole anime community is literally the Zodiac family. That we are all born into loving certain genres of anime and manga, and we like certain characters, we hate certain characters, we're going to ship this no matter what. If I am a Tokyo Ghoul fan, I will never watch the anime, I will only read the manga, yada yada yada. I am team Jellyfish, I am team Girls Band Cry. I am only going to watch shonens. I'm only going to watch shoujos.
I'm only a manga reader.
I'm only subs, you know?
I'm only dubs. I'm only an anime. I don't touch light novels, visual novels, whatever. Yes?
But at the root of it is we aren't just here to enjoy spectacle. And I think, like, of course, it'd be remiss of me to say that, like, people don't care about spectacle. No, that's absolutely, you know, the raison d'être to be like
I mean ourselves included, right?
Yeah.
I think one of the things that, and again, I'm just speaking in terms of my personal experience, or at least anecdotally what I've heard or observed, right? Anime is, and I use this analogy a lot, is very similar to video games in that you and I, at least, and a lot of our listeners, because we know, thanks to analytics, the demographics, are born in a time where anime was incredibly niche, where we have to trade VHS tapes, or in Hong Kong, at least, we had it good because we had VCDs, or there was an avenue for us to get anime because we're within the region of Asia, and at least here, people are more accepting of reading manga on the tram, on the MTR, or whatever, and no one really bats an eye or cares, or even at some point, they'll be like, yo, that's dope. Did you got the latest volume? That's awesome.
It's right? Exactly. Nowadays, it's more just like, you have a 15-hour flight, fuck, I'll just download all the anime I want to watch on Crunchyroll and Netflix, right? Like, back then, I had to go to a VCD/DVD store, look for the section that I was looking for, find the anime I wanted, and make sure that I could find the latest VCD for it. And if it wasn't there, I had to come back a month later to see if it was in stock, or if it was
or even we rented out. Yeah. But let's not forget, even Crunchyroll has humble beginnings in, like, fan subbing, and then it turned into the streaming platform that it is today. But one thing I want to, going back to, like, for example, the analogy of video games, is from the very beginning, we saw, not obviously the birth of it, because video games and anime existed far longer than we have existed, or many of us have existed, but we saw kind of the infancy and to... Now, I mean, I always reference episode 5 of, like, stigmatization and proliferation of anime and manga, right? And I think this is almost like it's version 1.5, what we're talking about here. It's we are so stuck in being so defensive of this niche when I would argue it's still a niche, but it's, like, a huge niche now. And
I mean, it's mainstream as fuck.
Yes.
It's absolutely mainstream, but you still have detractors outside, yep. Right? And that's, like... And can't do anything about that.
And same thing. It's like, imagine the reality of people going in video games being like, oh, wow, almost half of the entire industry or more than half is from mobile platforms. That's like a hard pill for people who are either PC rig and console gamers, like very hard for them to kind of accept. And even then, the PC master race versus like console war is always a shtick that people gravitate to.
But at the end of the day, it's like, you're never always going to see eye to eye with your family, right? You're never, and that's the thing. We're all under one big roof. You're going to have, you know, the PC master race. You're going to have the handheld mobile gamers, much like in anime. You're going to have people who only care about shonen actions. You have people who only care about romance shoujos. But at the end of the day, it's like, with all that inner fighting and all that, you still have that community of shonen fans. You still have that community of shoujo fans. You still have people who can come together and talk and feel safe and free to discuss their perspectives on a certain character, a specific relationship, a trope, a specific scene, and all that. And it's because the fact that, like, the internet is closer and closer for everybody now, we have such a massive global community of people from Peru or from India or Mongolia or Hong Kong just at the same time talking about episode 2 of Girls Band Cry or when, you know, Demon Slayer, you know, the next arc finally comes out. You wouldn't have had that as much in the past, as you mentioned, because those pillars didn't exist.
But I think going off of that, our mentalities hasn't exactly shifted dramatically either.
No, I don't think so.
I think we are still as in I'm included in you as well, we are still as defensive as we are.
It's just that more people are speaking up.
Yeah.
That's literally it. We now have a platform where you can go onto a forum or you can go onto a subreddit and talk shit or chat with people of like-mindedness.
Yeah.
And I think, like, what it all then boils down to then is, like you said, it's the relatability, right? Mm-hmm. Not to say that, like, oh, I find relatability in fucking Naruto because both my parents are dead and I have like a nine-tailed wolf that's like hiding inside, nine-tailed fox is hiding inside of me. It's like, no.
Unless if you're a Chunibyo.
But that's not the relatability we're going for. What we're talking about is sort of tropes of growing up disenfranchised from family, having no friends or having friends that, you know, you don't necessarily connect with, or having the troubles in school, in real life. That's the sense of relatability. What I always like kind of am conflicted with is people talk about, oh, I like this certain character because he's so relatable. It's like, damn, I do not know how broken your family is or how shit your life is for you to find that you are like that person. Because if you find that you are like relatable to Tanjiro of all people, I feel very, very bad for you. But what I will
I'll give you a hug because I think you might need it, that kind of thing.
What I
right?
will say is that for the general populace who may not have gone through such hardship, it is more a reference in terms of how to guide your life, how to see things from a perspective that this is absolutely dire, but you see the progression in that character, in this group of people going from one place to another. And that's where I feel a lot of people get that sense of belonging in anime and manga. It's not so much that like I see myself as Naruto. It's more just I see my life wanting to be on a similar journey to Naruto, to your Sasuke's, your Orochimaru's, or whoever.
I think it's not only if you identify or you ship or you stan a certain, you know, anime character, main character or whatnot. I think the also other thing is, again, being biased here because this is the Good Anime Palette podcast. I have seen so many instances, AnyTubers and everything is like, oh, I watched A Place Further in the Universe. And now I realize I should go outside and touch grass. And by God, I'm so glad for it. Like the wonders of the world, right? Like anime has that power. Whereas I would say when it is more of the K-On or even going back further of Ghost in the Shell being very philosophical. But even I don't know if that's like the greatest example, but it's like, in the beginning, it was more of, like, imagination, right? Like, Studio Ghibli with Laputa Castle in the Sky, Kiki's Delivery Service is, like, fantastical. Whereas, a lot of days, it's like, you can say it's cringe, you can say it's edgelord, Chunibyo. It's very introspective. Of course, you will always get people, like, in the characters in Orb, where it's, like, fighting beliefs that is in society. Of course, you'll get that in live action and everywhere, plethora. But when you're, I guess you can say, stubborn and stuck in our ways of being very biased towards anime, manga, visual novels, light novels, you can't help but be like, yo, 2D things actually propelled me to do stuff. And that disconnect, I think, is what a lot of people who are outside of this sphere, as you said, struggle with or discriminate against people who like anime, manga, visual, light novels is like,
well, I mean, yeah, even like comic books and graphic novels, right?
Yeah, it's like...
But it's like there's a reason why people love Spider-Man. There's a reason why people love Batman.
But they won't read, you know, Ultimate Spider-Man. They will never touch a comic book in their life.
Yeah, I wouldn't say so much as like, you know, there's... like I'm not talking about like that particular sort of like inner fighting of, oh, like, I only care for, like, the actual theatrical releases of the movies. I don't give a shit about the graphic novels. It's more, like, the characters themselves and who they represent. Whether or not you liked, you know, Miles Morales or Peter Parker, whether you only liked watching the animated movies or you like watching the live actions and you don't care about that. It's more, in the end, like, the idea of that character, the idea of that journey itself is what bonds everyone together despite everyone's differences in terms of what they appreciate. Much in the same way where it's like, you watched Parasite the Maxim, I read Parasite. Doesn't really matter how we consumed our thing. In the end, we still like the core concept of this particular character, this particular conflict, this particular kind of theme of things. And that's what I think in terms of anime and manga. I again, it exists everywhere else, but this is an anime and manga podcast, so we're going to talk specifically about anime and manga. When you cover such a wide diaspora of different genres and themes and characters, it gives opportunity for every person who watches or reads this genre an outlet. It allows for them to find a community where, hey, I like watching volleyball. Haikyuu is my thing. And so therefore, like, that's why you have like Team Nekoma, or you have Team Kurasuno, or just like, you have Team Kenma specifically, or Team Hinata specifically.
Going off of sports, Slam Dunk literally caused a lot of Japanese teenagers to go out and play ball or watch an NBA game when they previously wouldn't have.
Yeah.
Right? There are so many instances of that. But also there are a lot of instances where it's like, gives the impression that the weebdom anime manga community is kind of sus. For example, things like Rule 34, or like this salaryman marrying a 2D waifu, quote unquote, and like feed or a picture just, cake.
Or pantsu.
Sure.
Right? Like with every, well, not every, with a lot of models, right? Figures and all that.
Like the step-sibling genre? Yeah, sure.
No, I was more talking about, like, figurines and how, oh, like, yeah, you know, that particular angle is, yeah, always...
Let me talk about Jobless Reincarnation and Roxy did it good, yeah. You know what I mean? But the fact that we banter about that, or a lot of people that are kind of used to the way like anime manga go about doing the sort of trope or kind of fan service thing is hard for people outside to really accept, right? It's like, oh, I am, this person's my waifu. I think a lot of people find it cringe who don't know anything.
That you cared that much about a 2D character.
Yeah. And when you hear really out there stories of people really taking it too far, I'm not necessarily going to shun them, but at the same time, we as a community, as big as it is, and how, and when it grows even larger, it doesn't do us any good.
Yeah. I don't know. I think, like, of course, there's always going to be, like, the quote-unquote negative side of any entertainment, any genre that you like, mm-hmm. any hobby that you follow, right? Yeah. Like, you can say that about gaming. You can say that about tabletop gaming. You can say that about even just, you know, cosplaying as well, right? Like, there's,
yeah, are you telling me that if you dress up as Nezuko that you really actually can summon fire or like turn into a
or
demon?
Or like in the more extreme cases, like LARPing or furries, right? Do you really think that, like, by wearing all this armor you are a medieval knight? Do you really feel that you're wearing this, you are in tune with your animalistic instincts and whatnot? It's like, who cares? For them, this is what is comfortable for them. This is what they feel that they belong to as a community, as a family. And if they choose to enjoy that in this particular format, let them do so. And that's what I think is quite beautiful about the anime and manga community. Because, let's be real, you can have, like, developed infatuations, even like obsessions about certain live action characters, right? But at the end of the day, it's like, it's because of the fact that it's not just the character themselves, but also the actor or actress that's portraying them,
mm-hmm.
right? Like Harry Potter, okay? Are you in love with Harry Potter because it's Harry Potter or because it's Daniel Radcliffe, right? There's going to be one or two ways. But when it comes to an anime character or a manga character, that's that. Naruto is Naruto. There's nobody behind Naruto. Right, I don't want to hear about like the live action stuff, because at the end of the day, the core concept is still Naruto. It's still Sasuke. So why is it that, like, when people infatuate over like a Harry Potter, whether it is in the book or, you know, portrayed by Daniel Radcliffe, that's more to be like deemed socially normal. But when you start standing for like a Sasuke, that becomes a little bit more sus.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure like those kinds of attitudes have changed over time, but they still exist.
Yeah, it definitely has improved for the better, but it's, and I don't think it'll ever be quote unquote wiped out or
Like, for sure, like, when people, like, come up with, like, their waifus and husbandos of the year, or even just, like, a tier list of waifus and husbandos, there's always going to be a level of cringe. Shit, like, I cringe a bit, too. But in the end, I still also have, like, my select list of husbandos and waifus. So it's, like, it might come off as hypocritical, but it's, like, that's why it's, like, there's always, like, that level of intensity in terms of, like, how much you want to be part of this community, how much you want to be part of this fandom and whatnot. Like, there's going to be people that are a bit more fair, like, a little bit more, like, fair weather. There's going to be people that are a bit more on the fence. There's going to be people that are a lot more all in. But regardless of what side of the spectrum you are on this thing, it's like, we're all still part of the same community. And whether you agree with someone being that deeply infatuated with something, or you care because this person isn't as infatuated as you are in it, we're all talking about the same thing.
Yeah.
We all like the same thing. And that's what, like, that's where, like, that sense of belonging is. We might belong at different points and different stages and levels, but we still have a shared affinity of this genre that has brought so many people together from all over the world. Jesus Christ. Like, I don't think there's any country in the world that doesn't like watching anime.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it's North Korea, but yeah, I understand what you're saying.
I'm sure there's a North Korean manhwa up there. I'm sure.
Probably.
They just have to be very, very careful about what they're putting in there, because it's going to be vetted as fuck. But, I mean, dude, there's so many fans out in Russia. There's so many fans out in India. There's so many fans out in Ecuador and Brazil and France, right? Like, you wouldn't have ever thought that there would be something that was, like, so internationally connective.
But at the same time, it is very samey in that a lot of it is Japanese dub and your local language sub. Again, I'm not saying I hate, you know, dubbing in your local language. But for the most part, a lot of people experience anime through Japanese audio. It's like that thing like with K-pop, right? Do you think the majority, or do I think the majority of people actually know Korean?
No.
No.
Absolutely not.
There will be some that pick it up, I guess, or will pick out certain words, but the majority...
Yeah, you're going to hear stories of people who learn Korean through K-dramas and K-pop, just like how you have people who learn Japanese through anime and manga.
Or video games, yeah, absolutely, but...
Like, I actually have a friend who, he's Vietnamese-American, but then he learned Japanese... Because he always had a thing about the culture. But then he really, really learned Japanese because there were a lot of RPGs that are Japanese exclusive. And he really wanted to play them. But because they're not in English, he learned Japanese so he can enjoy them. And he's, like, by far, like, I can't name any of the games because they're all in Japanese and I've never played them before. But they, for him, were the best games he ever played because of the fact that it was as close to the source. As close to, like... The fountain of knowledge for them.
The purity
exactly.
of it.
Exactly. Yeah. Whereas for you and I, yes, we are watching in Japanese, but we still have the English subtitles or sometimes Chinese subtitles.
But here is a hot... I don't know if it's like the hottest take, but I think if we consider the community of anime, manga, light novels, visual novels, all of that, right? The weebdom as living in a house... There comes a certain point when your house gets so massive, or, you know, the amount of
people... At this point, you're in a mansion.
Right, sure.
Yeah.
Where you can't actually identify... I mean, there are, like, subcultures. There are, like, this room and that room. But for the most part, it's so massive in terms of the fan base that it doesn't even matter of the labeling. And the reason why I say that is because if we talk about live action, right... You don't necessarily... You could always say, oh, that's a Marvel movie, that's a fantasy show. But you don't say, that's an anime, that's a manga, that's a manhwa, and draw your line there. Or like, oh, the solo leveling of the manhwa versus, you know, a Japanese anime. But for us right now, currently... We still have that stubbornness, even though the house is getting larger and larger and larger, but our acceptance is still very, I wouldn't say rudimentary, but it's like
Like acceptance of like liking a different genre or a different medium?
I mean things, no. I mean like when you say Avatar The Last Airbender is an anime. And people are like, nah, son.
Oh, yeah, but at that point, like that in itself is like the epitome of tribalism.
Yeah.
Right? Where you, no matter what, like it's a hill that you will stand and die on because the fact that everyone else is wrong and you are right and you will fight to the death for it. So the whole, like, this is not even meant to be like a discussion about Avatar The Last Airbender, but here we are.
Here we are.
Who cares what you call it? I've talked to many a friend when they talk about anime, and it's like, maybe they don't even watch anime, but the first anime that comes out of their mouth is Avatar Last Airbender.
Mm.
And I'll be like, in my mind, I'm like, by my definition, it's not an anime, but I also don't care how you categorize it because it's still an animated show. And so if your definition of anime, and again, it's back onto mm-hmm. you, asshole, asking me what anime is, mm-hmm. it's like, so be it. But you're always going to have people that are like, you know, very steadfast on what it means to be a weeb, what it means to be an anime fan. And therefore, if you were to break outside of that, hey, come back in, or you're going to stray further and further into the darkness. Like, don't call Last Airbender an anime because it's not an anime. But at the end of the day, it's like, why would you need to be so strong about your stance of what an anime means when the anime you like, someone else is absolutely going to hate? Do you then have a problem with that? Like, look, we had our little back and forth about the whole, why the fuck would you like watching Jellyfish Can't Swim at Night, and why I would like Girls Band Cry. But it's like, we're arguing about two separate things that come from the same tree, and that they're both pretty good anime. It doesn't necessarily matter which side of the fence we're on. It would be very different if we were to say, you like both, and I didn't like both, but not because I didn't like them as series. I just didn't like anime. That's a whole different conversation, right? And so when we have these kinds of walls, wow, even your Siri is like acting up too. Siri is like, yeah, I want to get into this conversation too. But yeah, like
it said, I just didn't like anime. That was what was recorded, and the response was, I don't understand.
Yeah, see, even Siri's got a bone to pick with for people who don't like anime.
Yeah, it does not compute.
Yeah.
She's coming alive. Holy shit.
But there are going to be people who don't care or even like acknowledge anime. And that's completely fine, right? But that's because of the fact that for them, like their sense of belonging is somewhere else. Their sense of identifying through the medium of entertainment lies in a different field. You know, for us here within the Weebdom, even then, it's like you don't just exclusively watch anime and read manga. There's going to be a live-action movie or a TV series or a docu-series that you're going to like.
I mean, between you and I would say I'm like 90-95% anime manga. But it's not necessarily because I am very stubborn. It's just because that's like the medium and the avenue in which I would like to consume my entertainment.
And a lot of stuff that you like, if there's an anime or manga forum for it, boom.
I mean, that's why for light novels, I don't really bat an eye. I don't hate them or shun them, but I will be like, oh, this light novel got an anime adaptation. I want to check it out, but I'm not going to read the light novel. There better be a manga adaptation published in English. Oh, thank God. Okay, let's read that, right? Because, but the light novel is... Well,
but then again, Monogatari. Did you read the manga before watching the anime?
No, but I read the manga.
It did, but exactly. So, but you watched the anime knowing that there was a light novel out there too,
and in English, yeah.
But it didn't matter,
yes. Right?
Because in the end, like you had a certain way that you felt that you belonged in terms of consuming this particular medium, and you stuck with it. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, there isn't. Holy shit! Like we're it's a very illuminating discussion. Maybe. Personally, hopefully, like listeners also find it equally interesting and engaging, right?
But it's also like we're not trying to like dive deep into the psychology and the minds of anime watchers and manga readers. Yeah, it's all more just trying to find that point of commonality amongst all of us into like why we even got into anime and manga in the first place.
Actually, that's a very good question. I don't know how I really got into it. Like, I legitimately don't remember. I mean, obviously, I remember like way back when instances, but I don't know. Like,
I think it's a little bit different for us here in Asia because of the fact that at the time when we started getting into anime and manga, it was already quite popular and quite widespread in the sense that like there were like a lot more fans of it and more people who are more accepting of it compared to when you were growing up in middle America in like the 2000s and you just happen to be on Adult Swim and Toonami comes up and they're doing reruns of Cowboy Bebop.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like for a lot of people, that's why like Cowboy Bebop, Ghost in the Shell, Samurai Champloo, that was like, or even Akira, that was like their first instance of getting into the anime scene. Whereas for me, it was like, I watched Pokemon, I watched Digimon, I watched Sailor Moon, I then gravitated to watching Naruto, Hunter x Hunter, Fullmetal Alchemist, and those were great. And then afterwards, then spiraled into me watching the Nodame Katebile and Honey and Clover. Like, there was no like correlation between Naruto and Honey and Clover. There's absolutely nothing that brings the two together, but I love them both just as much as I do now. And it was just because of the fact that when I was watching this particular genre of entertainment, it made me feel a little bit more connected with the story. It made me feel a little bit more connected with the characters. Yes, I was still watching live action at the time. Shit, they do like, at the time I was watching anime, I was an even bigger Ultraman and Power Rangers fan.
Right, Sentai kind of kaiju fight.
That shit was my shit.
Right.
But over time, it's not like I don't watch Ultraman anymore, but I kind of grew out of it. Whereas with anime and manga, yes, there are going to be points where like I kind of slow down my consumption, but it's always very easy for me to get back into watching it because it covers a wider... Because in the end, it's like I'm comparing like a big-ass genre of anime and manga, a form of medium, compared to just Sentai. And Sentai is very, like, very much rigid in terms of how it's supposed to showcase itself,
mm-hmm.
right?
So, how are we doing on time? Are we going to wrap up soon or not? Because the reason why I ask is...
No, keep going.
Okay, because I just prompt me when...
No, we're really good on time.
No, because I want to end on something that I will only reveal when we are wrapping up, because I think it would be a very eloquent way to end this discussion.
We could do that now. I mean, like, from the vibe of it, it sounds like it could take anywhere from 5 to 20 minutes, and that would actually be very perfect in terms of okay. how much time we have.
So we talked about a lot of different examples, themes, even different mediums, bridging IRL to fictitious static images or frames per second, you know, anime.
Make-believe family relationships and all that.
I think, if I may be so bold, if I reference one piece of work to really encapsulates almost every single thing that we talked about in terms of spirit or literally talking about the same thing.
Blood on the Tracks.
No.
No, of course not. Absolutely not, no. A great manga, but no, that's not like...
Do you know it finished?
I what?
Yeah.
It's done.
Yeah, I think there's like 16 volumes.
Anime incoming soon. Done by Tezuka Productions.
Dude, I will fucking lose my shit and
I would be pretty angry as well if that was the case. But what's the thing you wanted to talk about?
I cannot think of a more suitable way to end this episode, this discussion, on a one-shot manga series called Look Back that literally encapsulates almost everything that we said by the mangaka of Chainsaw Man, Fujimoto Sensei. Because Look Back, A, is a bit meta because it talks about the manga industry. Then it talks about the journey if you identify as a mangaka. It is a one-volume, one-shot.
Did you know there's a film adaptation coming out?
Yep.
But done by Studio Durian.
Yep. I think it's coming out in like July or something.
June.
Oh, yeah.
So it'll be in Japan, and then who knows how long it'll take to get here in Hong Kong.
But you bet your ass we're going to be in line day one.
I'll be watching. I'll absolutely be watching.
Yeah, we definitely should. Because I think it's going to be immensely interesting. But okay, not only that, but you also have to understand that at that time, Fujimoto Sensei did something that is so ballsy, which is on the ending of part one, he's like, with an anime adaptation incoming, I don't know if it was announced at that time, but now it's like at that time he was like, "Yo, I'm gonna chill, not even take a hiatus, but I'm just gonna release a bunch of one shots, and I'll start with Look Back." And I think when we first heard about this, we just lost our fucking collective minds. Maybe even as a community, almost universally, be like, "The fuck are you doing?" When the momentum is this high, this hard, and then you're like, "Yeah, I'm just gonna chill." And with a one-shot, and one-shot traditionally speaking, going off of lineage and the way things are done, to be like, you don't do that. And also, one-shots, like, what's the point? It's not even like an ongoing series for Civilization. How is it going to work? And then at the same time, it illuminates like practices and the harsh reality of identifying yourself as a mangaka or as part of the staff of that industry. Then all of a sudden, for you and I to read it for free on a digital platform of all places, which at that time, I can only think of Spy X Family and Kaiju Number 8 that is anything relevant on Jump Plus Manga Plus. Before K-Manga, you know, Manga Up, you know, shit shows that they are, didn't even exist. It wasn't even in the conversation at that time. It is like mind-boggling to me that Look Back encapsulates literally everything that we have said almost to a T in spirit.
I mean, Goodbye Arian, just listen to the song, we're also very relatable to.
True, but I would say Look Back in terms of also literally we're looking back on what is a home, what is your identity, do you belong or not? It is like the most bittersweet, eloquent way that encapsulates this whole theme that we're kind of talking about.
I think sometimes we tend to forget. I mean, like when I brought up the question as well of how people got into anime and manga in the first place, and you're like, "Wow, shit! Actually, I don't even know." And like that's something that we forget over time. It's like I remember exactly why I started supporting a specific sports team. I remember exactly why I got into doing taekwondo as a kid. I remember exactly why I have a love for cooking, right? But when it comes to anime and manga as a form of entertainment, even though it has been so pivotal in my life and your life as well, we, lack of a better word, we never actually look back in terms of how we got there in the first place. We never think about, was Naruto really the thing that got us into the genre in the first place? Was it maybe something else beforehand? Because even before all the Pokemons and all the Digimons, even Doraemon,
yeah.
For me, it was Ghibli.
Right. And I think for a lot of people Kiki's as well. Kiki's
Delivery Service and Porcoroso were the first two movies I watched. Not Totoro, though I do absolutely love Totoro.
It was Laputa and the Castle in the Sky for me.
That was also a really good movie.
That was the first one I watched.
Yeah.
But in Cantonese.
But it's dub. Oh, yeah. I watched Porcoroso as well as Kiki in Cantonese as well. But, like, it's not like I found a sense of belonging in terms of, like, oh, this is the family I wanted. This is the kind of journey I want to be on. It was more just like, I am fully immersed in this wonderful fictional world that Miyazaki and Ghibli had put together, and it gave me this feeling that as a genre, this is something. I'm speaking in hindsight because at the time I was five, so I had clearly no idea what the fuck I was watching.
Right.
But this is something that I can probably look back on and be like, "This is where it all began."
Right.
This is
your origin story.
This is where I officially started getting into anime and manga. Not Bible Black, as a lot of people might think, but getting into this fantastical world, this thing where it's like, I mean, I grew up watching cartoons, right? Like, I watched Dexter's Laboratory, you know, Cow and Chicken,
Cat Did you Dog watch Gargoyle?
No, but I know what show. I know what
Sewer Shark?
No.
Ooh. I was into, like, the toys from Toys R Us.
Oh, Sewer. Okay. Then I know Sewer Shark. Never watched it, but, like, I remember the toys.
I was so scared of Batman.
I mean, shit, dude. There's still people there, like, that talk about, like, the original G.I. Joe and fucking Transformers.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, you, like, reject modernity.
It's nostalgia.
Reject modernity. Embrace tradition, you know?
Yeah. The thing is, right? Again, if I knew, I would get into it or I would invest into it. But I don't see manga, other than going, you know, obviously from physical to digital, or anime, you know, looking sharper or maybe incorporating more CGI or having the balance and stuff. Like, where do we go as a medium from here?
For manga?
Or anime, right? Because, like, what, add VR maybe? Or AR? But the thing is, like...
So, I'll tell you this.
Yeah.
I actually lied in that, you know, in the previous episode when I was talking about, like, I watched Parasite the Maxim and all that shit, right? And also watched...
You mean you didn't watch Parasite the Maxim?
No, Parasite the Grey. Like, that wasn't the only thing I watched.
Okay.
I watched one episode of Jormungand.
Okay.
Okay. First of all,
hold on.
First of all, it's decent.
Okay.
It's not amazing. I kind of like it, but it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But what I will say is that when I was watching this, a series that came out back in 2012.
Yep.
I outside of like the Ubrez. Not much different from what I will be watching now.
Mm.
And I think that's essentially the plateau that we've reached. In that, despite all the advancements we have in CGI, artificial intelligence, that's as far as it's going to be.
Right. That you can think of more premises or more interesting characters.
I mean, what could be
but more, what can we done?
I mean, what could be more realistic than what your eyes already see? Right, there's only so much you can do on screen. Okay, like we've had like forays into like 3D TVs. You have forays into, you know, using VR and wearing head goggles and shit. Mm-hmm. I mean, like fucking like the Apple Vision Pro like just launched like a few weeks ago, right?
In fact, I would argue when technology advances and people try to implement it, aka 60 frames per second anime, it looks fucking horrendous.
That's not an advancement I want to see.
But ever since
I saw like someone actually up-resing the resolution and also the frame rate of the
Sora Online OP,
no, do not do that.
And maybe we will eat our words when there is a time when that becomes the norm, right?
But it's also like if you move that into live action, right, like with superhero movies and all that,
mm-hmm.
Were the explosions and the lasers and the fights in like the modern day Captain America or Captain Marvel any more like crazy than what we first saw in Iron Man 2008? Not that crazy. It's, we haven't gone that far. In fact, like when I was watching Doctor Strange, the sequel movie, I thought the CGI was trash because it tried too much. It worked too hard in trying to warp your mind. I liked it when it was more... It was still very much like mindfuckery, but it was a lot more simple in the first Doctor Strange movie. We've gotten to a point now where like that's probably like the plateau. This is like the pinnacle of entertainment technology and advancement. Where if we go any further, it then becomes the uncanny valley.
Or detrimental.
Yeah, you will
to your success.
You will get diminishing returns, or you get to the point where you just cannot tell if this is real or not. That's what when you start watching something and you can see that like it's blended so well that you don't even know if it's CGI or not.
It's like in Inception when they go down to the basement and everyone rather choose to sleep rather than live in reality, right? Or it gets that like existential and sci-fi,
or you know, Matrix and all that, right? Like, I think we probably won't see a a much grander acceleration in terms of how anime and manga will be presented. And it's because it doesn't need to. I think we've reached a point where we all know that this is the best that we will accept, not the best we'll have, because there will be more later on that people will be willing to risk and try. But whether or not that the general populace is okay with it, it doesn't really matter, because we have already found our comfort zone. We found our sense of belonging in this. It's not how something looks, it's how it presents itself and the general themes and story that it tells you, right? Like, I'll be honest, I actually really like the anime, the drawing style of Parasite. A lot of people don't, but
I don't.
But you move away from that, and the core story of it is what encapsulates people. There's a reason why there's so many remakes of Disney movies. It's not that people want to see what things. Oh, what does Snow White look like in 2036 compared to when it first came out in 1970 or 1980? No, people don't care about that. People just want to see that story, because that's where they belonged in. That's where they felt that sense of comfort. And so therefore, like, whether you choose to watch things like Spice and Wolf, Merchant Meets the Wise Wolf, or you watch the original two adaptations from 2008 and 2009, I think that you remove yourself from how something looks and just get to the core of it, you then remember why you liked this particular series, and on the grander scale, why you love anime and manga in general. So I'm not so concerned about what advancements we might expect in anime and manga, though there probably will be plenty, right? We're just entering a new era of what people can do with technological advancements.
Or what machines can do, AI, right? Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's like an AI script is still going to be a script.
It's still drawings on like a 2D plane that will be animated.
It's the content we care about. It's the content that we belong with.
And I think it's really magical that technically moving pictures can instill that. Like, not like IRL actors and actresses not throwing shade at them, or convincing CGI that bewilders what I am seeing in front of me. But when you really look down to the essence of it, sometimes I really think, like, it's kind of crazy that a drawing of a character in motion
can be so impactful.
Like, it's kind of bonkers when I think about it.
Yeah, I mean, like, it wasn't that long ago when I think it was Giga Garnt, like, he was like talking about how he actually never watched Avatar: The Last Airbender, and by the end of it he was crying. It's an old ass show. It's not technically anime, quote unquote, though, you know, your definition could vary. But for him, it was like the story was so beautiful. And it reminded him of like his childhood bewilderment in looking into a fantastical world and appreciating this medium and what joys it brought him, or how it got him out of like a dark place, because no other medium could offer him that. And that's why I think when it comes to bringing it back all full circle into this sense of home and belonging, that's what we all strive to achieve when getting into any medium, particularly anime and manga, given this is an anime and manga podcast, right? And so when we talked about like watching Look Back, whether or not it looks good as an animated form, I still feel that the plot itself is what drives me to want to watch it in the first place. It's that's it. I think that as long as you can feel a connection to a story, you can feel emotions coming from the way that characters and lines are delivered to you, that's where my belonging is.
Yeah, it's pretty apt. All right.
I'm still very excited to watch the movie. So, yeah, when it comes out, we're definitely lining up. But, yeah, wow, we actually managed to talk for over an hour and 40 minutes about this shit.
Wow.
You're still listening to this. You guys are troopers. And I certainly hope that this is something that is interesting for you. if you listen this far and you're wondering like what the point of these conversations are.
Oh, yeah, what the fuck are these two dudes talking about?
But that's the thing. I think like when you talk about anime and manga, it's very easy to talk about specific series, directors, studios, genres, because
the, and those are all relevant and important, by the way,
but,
as well.
And, but it's also because of the fact that like it presents itself for what it specifically is. Naruto is Naruto, horror is horror, you know, Masaki is Masaki, and that's it. But when it comes to talking about more fluid things like belonging and identity, it's such a moving needle that it's really hard for you to pin
down.
Yeah. So, and I hope that like with this kind of discussion, it allows for you to at least think beyond just watching the spectacle and looking into the makings of this wonderful medium that brought you here in the first place.
And what it has brought us to is the end of at least this episode of the Good Anime Palette Podcast. We would appreciate it if you would leave a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. We also would actually, especially this time around, would love to hear from you if you have any thoughts on the stuff that we talked about, because I think we went into a lot of different directions, but I think it's always these types of discussions that makes it quite interesting and engaging. You can always tell us your thoughts by contacting us through our email, gapalette@gmail.com. That's GAPALETTE, all lowercase, all one word, using the handle @paletteGood, capital P and capital G, all one word. And all of our other social media links, as well as our Discord invite link, is in the show description. I have a website, www.goodanimepalette.com, all lowercase, all one word. Please check it out so you can see Will's bio telling him that Bible Black was indeed the first anime that he has watched, technically.
Lies.
But what is not lies is the music credits that we will give for this episode. Our intro music is Flow to It by Taipa. Our break music, even though it wasn't used, but we will feature them nonetheless because they're dope, is Laser Drops by Hip Color. And our outro music is 2011 by Rocket Jr. You can always support the music artists that we feature by listening to them on Spotify, Apple Music, or your music listening platform of choice. And Epidemic Sound provides all of our royalty-free music. If you're interested, you can sign up using the referral link in the show description. Terms and conditions apply. So, now that we have gotten to this point, we are about to wrap up Season 7 of the GAP.
It's come this far.
Yeah.
And you know what that means? It means that the next episode, you're going to be listening to two bumbling idiots drinking alcohol and talking about their seasonal awards. We haven't even decided what our drink of choice is for that. We should keep it simple, though. Because what happens more often than not, actually, when I say what happens all the time, is that we get a little too hot and heavy.
I want sake. I want to bring it back.
Bring it back? Okay. We can do sake. Yeah. I like the highballs, but sake is a little bit easier.
I mean, highballs are good too, but.
But it's like you have, because you have to.
We
like,
got
to
switch it up, right?
Yeah. But it's also just easier just to pour one thing as opposed to pour two things.
Yeah. And maybe we should maybe ease off on the rate that we consume it, because I always remember like at the halfway point.
Because we would drink for every award. And there were 12 awards in the beginning, so we already had 12 shots of sake.
Yeah, and we're like, oh, fucker, now drink, right? I'm going to tell you right now, you better be ready for the mystery quiz segment, because I already have it planned and ready to go, and I can't wait to see how you're going to figure it out.
I'm just going to go in completely blind, as always.
And that's all you can do, yes. Unfortunately.
There's nothing I can do to try and, like, you know, guesstimate what's going on. I'll be pleasantly surprised by whatever you present.
I think you'll just find it hilarious.
So, without further ado, thank you all for listening to today's episode. We hope it was insightful. And I quite like this format of just, you know, bringing up a discussion and actually going a bit more freeform as opposed to sort of formulating like specific talking points, even though there's like, because they both do separate things.
Yeah, right? I think there's always a time and place for more concrete, well-structured kind of episodes. But yeah, everyone, I mean,
like, especially if you're doing like a genre analysis or if you're doing like a character breakdown, you need to have some sort of structure. But when it comes to these things that are a little bit more fluid, I think it's just nice to be able to bounce ideas and bounce discussions off of each other that we may or may not have talked about if it weren't for this kind of format.
Yeah. So let's see what else is in store for us and everyone else in the future.
Yep. So stay tuned, because we'll be doing our seasonal awards coming up for our next episode. And then after that, season 8. So without further ado, thank you all for listening. We'll catch you all in the next one.
Peace.